liberty, and justice for all.
Thank you. Let's go ahead with I think we're going to have a roll call as soon as I find where our city clerk is.
Councilmember Bravo?
Here.
Councilmember Moreno?
Here.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Here.
Mayor O'Malley?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. First item will be the approval of the agenda.
Move approval of agenda.
Second.
Of a motion by Councilmember Sturdivant, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Bravo?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Our first agenda item is a presentation regarding November's National Hospice Palliative Care Month. And good to see Executive Director Chris Kington Baker back once again. If you would stand at the lectern, we'll go ahead and have Mayor-elect Ms. Moreno.
Heather Moreno, that's my name.
Oh, yeah, I forgot your name. Yeah, I'm already out the door.
Thank you. This is a proclamation for National Hospice Palliative Care Month, November 2018. Whereas hospice and palliative care empower people facing a serious or life-threatening illness to live as fully as possible, ensuring people dignity, choice, and quality of life. And whereas the hospice model involves an interdisciplinary, team-oriented approach to treatment, including expert medical care, quality symptom control, and comprehensive pain management as a foundation of care. And whereas, beyond providing physical treatment, hospice attends to the patient's emotional, spiritual, and family needs and provides family services like respite care and bereavement counseling. And whereas, in an increasingly fragmented and broken healthcare system, hospice is one of the few sectors that demonstrates how healthcare can and should work at its best for its patient. And whereas a growing body of peer-reviewed research indicates that timely access to hospice and palliative care can decrease hospitalizations and emergency room visits and increase quality of life for patients and family caregivers. And whereas every year more than 1.4 million Americans living with life-limiting illnesses and their families receive care from one of the nation's hospice programs in communities throughout the United States. And whereas more than 355,000 trained volunteers contribute 16 million hours of service to hospice and programs annually in the U.S., and whereas Central Coast Hospice, Dignity Health Hospice, Hospice of San Luis Obispo County, and Wilshire Hospice provide hospice care and bereavement counseling, respectively, to individuals within the county of San Luis Obispo. And whereas hospice and palliative care organizations are advocates and educators about advanced care planning and help individuals make decisions about the care they want. Now, therefore, be it resolved that we, the City Council members of the City of Atascadero, do hereby proclaim November 2018 as National Hospice and Palliative Care Month and encourage citizens to increase their understanding and awareness of care at the end of life and to observe this month with appropriate activities and programs.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Chris, why don't we have you join us in front? I think our deputy director would like to take a photo with us all. Then we're going to give you a chance to tell us a little bit more about this event coming up and organization.
I'm here representing myself, my organization, which is Hospice of San Luis Obispo County, but also standing in representation of Wilshire Hospice, Central Coast Hospice, and Dignity. No one in this county is without the resources of a palliative care or a hospice program that is available to them. This is currently one of the few counties in the United States, actually, one of 33 counties that has available to them both a medical hospice through Dignity, Central Coast, and Wilshire, and a non-medical or a volunteer hospice, which is what Hospice of San Luis Obispo County is. The rest of them have closed down. And the difference is that we attend to not only individuals in the last 6 months of life in this organization, we attend to those that are much farther from the end of life, which supports the medical hospices. What that means is for individuals that are growing older, individuals that have longer illnesses in this community, they have the kind of support that they need that other communities can't offer. The way that this community has supported this organization and the collaboration of these hospices and home health agencies together has been tremendous. This is our 40th year here in this community, and it's only because of organizational collaboration and the support of the communities and the cities, the counties, and the businesses that we can continue to operate. Hospice is something that if people access earlier, it is much better for the entire family. We continue to see at all levels that hospice is attained much later than it could be. Often in our community, very similar to other communities across the nation, it is not accessed until the very end weeks of an individual's life. And that's something that we're working together to try and change. Thank you for this. Thank you for the proclamation and for the time. Oh,
I think we have it now. Very good. I did want to personally thank you, Chris, because prior to my 16 years on council, back in the mental health days where I retired from, you weren't even working in so many health and human service areas for many years. And I just thank you for your effort of all of these years. And we all know folks who've been touched by hospice and have family and friends that really have appreciated the services that you've worked tirelessly on for many years. So besides a thank you to pretty well organized organization in our county, a personal thanks to you.
Thank you. That's wonderful.
And thanks for
coming
out.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
The next item on our agenda is the consent calendar. Items considered to be routine in nature that do not need a lot of discussion unless someone wants to pull it for further discussion and or information. And we have the opportunity for council members and members of the public to pull an item. I've had a request to pull item number 6 regarding the Chicago Grain landfill, so we will do that. Is any other council members wishing to pull an item for discussion?
Just 6.
And how about members of the public? Anyone wishing to pull any other items for more discussion? Seeing none, then I would entertain a motion on the consent calendar items 1 through 5.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Burbeau, seconded by Councilwoman Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Burbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonsi?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Well, I actually had quite a bit of discussion on this item on KPRL today. It was an item that generated some interest, so I'm not surprised we'll be talking about it as well. Did you want to ask some specific questions, and we'll go to staff?
Yes, I just have a very quick question, and this is regarding the clause that's in the contract about extraordinary rate increases in specific circumstances. I wondered if we had that specific circumstance, if you could give us an example of that, and would it then come to the council, or it would be taken in-house and automatically go through?
So the contract is written so that it would not be taken to the council, but could be approved at a staff level. You're asking about the extraordinary rate increase. So I do want to look at that just for a moment. It is written similar to our other waste contracts, where if it is something that both the staff and Chicago Grade do agree upon and it makes complete sense, that it could be approved at a staff level. Certainly something larger or controversial or something where staff couldn't see, hey, this exactly makes sense. So what's happening with recycling, landfills, waste, is there are a lot of changing regulations and laws that are constantly changing. So as you enter into a 10-year contract, it's hard to foresee exactly what the new regulations would be. If Chicago Grade could say, okay, the state now makes us do X, which we've never had to do before, and that costs us an extra $10,000 a year, we would work with them so that they would have to prove to staff that, yes, this really does cost $10,000 a year. Yes, this is a new law that couldn't be foreseen when we entered into this contract that had been adopted afterwards and shouldn't be reasonably done. And then, yes, you know, what is that cost when you divide it by the number of tons that they receive from the city of Atascadero? And actually from the whole, because they'd have to do it over all of their tons, what portion does belong to the city of Atascadero. So they're very specific circumstances. It's something that we work with the city attorney on to make sure that it does meet the criteria of making them eligible for an extraordinary rate increase. And as I said, if they weren't able to meet that level of proof or that, then it would come to the council.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And Councilmember Bowe, a question?
Yes, I actually had intended to pull item A6 as well. I had a number of questions this morning in my meeting with the city manager on this item. And in particular, I wanted to discuss on the very first page of the staff report, which is page 39 of the agenda, the tipping fee that is paid to the city, which you'll note it says $1 per ton, and that's no change. I had asked what the purpose of the tipping fee is, and it's to help cover some of the costs of the city's negotiating of the contract, monitoring and administering the agreement. And I had asked the city manager to look at it. How long has it been a dollar? And I think she has determined that. And because my premise was that it probably shouldn't continue to be a dollar forever if it's been a dollar for a long time, and this being a 10-year agreement with another 5-year renewal, in my mind, we probably should be increasing that roughly at the same rate, the same 50% of CPI in the past or 70% CPI in the future, as we are on the tonnage rate. So if you could, city manager, if you could address how long it's been and what those impacts would be.
Yes. It has been a dollar since the year of 2000, so we have not increased it. It's a dollar per ton, so it does not increase with CPI, just with more material brought to the landfill. I looked at the CPI period over that same period since it was last increased, and that has increased by 55% over the last 18 years. If you're looking at, so that is the total CPI for that period. Over the contract life, Chicago Grade has been receiving 50% of the CPI. So if you were interested in that number, that would be close to 27%. So if you were looking at an increase, it could be $1.27 per ton, and then perhaps increase the
It would increase at the same rate in the future at 70% if you were interested. If you did this, Chicago Grade would like to increase their total fee, because that's part of the amount they collect of the, I think it's $42.88 that they collect right now. $1 of that goes to the city. And so if we did increase that by whatever amount, by let's say the 27 cents, the amount that they would want to charge per ton would also go up by 27 cents.
Passed on to the consumer as usual. And I guess the question I would have in parallel to that is, we've always said we don't want to shift costs on to other users. We want to have full cost recovery. So the question is not necessarily what the consumer price index is, which is a general number. The question would be, have our costs gone up in monitoring this contract? And there have been some economies of scale efficiencies over the years. There's a lot of variables involved in these kind of contracts. But just in your ballpark opinion, do you believe our costs of managing this program have gone up in that time period? And if so, under our existing council policy, implementing a full cost recovery, and maybe we're below cost recovery in any case because of a lot of other variables. It's a service we provide our community, and we've always tried to keep costs as low as we can for our consumer. So could you comment on that from that different angle?
Absolutely. We don't have the data that we have on this as we do other for service fees. This is a franchise fee, so it's not necessarily a one-to-one. I can tell you, but by my gut, our costs have definitely increased to do this. Our staff time may not be quite as much as it used to be. However, the cost of the of that staff time has increased. And so, you know, certainly considering an increase of the 27% or even the 55%, I can say with a straight face, without running any numbers, that it certainly feels like we can easily meet that bar.
Okay, so that was a good thing to bring up, Councilmember Burbeau, and I think I would suggest, let me ask a question of our city manager. Is this something that could be factored in, or could this potentially be any consequences of holding this up to bring back with that consideration? And understand that that's something, but we have an existing policy at the council that we're going to try to achieve full cost recovery. This is a case where it may be, we know that this would not do that, but it would get us closer when the cost of information is also another cost. So this might be something that the next council would like to consider. So I would certainly support the next council getting a chance to consider this if that seems reasonable to you.
So I'm not positive that there's going to be a lot more information to do a cost study to figure this out. We don't have that data, so it would be the same type of information. So it would just be that. If the next council, or if you would like to see the exact language, we could certainly go back, work on this, and get the exact language. Or the course that would take the least staff time is to give the city manager and the city attorney the authorization to execute the agreement with any modifications needed for whatever direction you may give.
And I think that was my intention, from what I understood, is to simply go with a CPI index. It doesn't require a lot of analysis, as long as we are convinced that that's somewhere less than cost recovery.
Yes.
And we, as Councilman Fonzi has pointed out, we already have in the agreement that staff has some leeway to do that. So in approving this with some direction from the council, you could go ahead and implement that.
Correct.
And with that, I'm going to turn it back to Councilmember Burbeau, if you'd potentially like to offer a modification or
yes,
make a motion.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I intended to move that we approve the agreement, and but with the authorizing of the city manager and the city attorney to come to agreement with the landfill owners on incorporating a CPI rate increase for the tipping fee.
Again, I will second that motion, and however, I do might be jumping the gun slightly because I intended to bring this, open it up to the public at this time. So I'm going to hold that motion, and we certainly could well modify it if we get some new information from any of you. But you can see the direction the council is considering going. So I'm going to open up to the public on this one item, Chicago grade landfill agreement. So if anyone would like to speak on this item, now is the time. And seeing no one approach, we'll bring it back to the council, and I would...
Want me to repeat it, or can we just go
with what I said? No, I think we have that motion on file. I did accept it and second it. Laura.
If you could repeat your motion, that would be great.
Okay, well, we're moving approval of the agreement, but authorizing the city manager and the city attorney to work with the landfill owner to incorporate language to increase the tipping fee based on past and future CPI increases.
And are we looking 100% of CPI or 50 and 70?
I originally was thinking 50 for the past and 70 for the future, which would be the same as the arrangement made for the landfill itself.
Sounds good, and I will second that. So if, when you are ready, you roll call, please.
Councilmember Burbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes.
And that concludes our consent calendar items.
Well, that's what you think. there is another piece.
Another piece.
Yeah. If you look at 4.1A little I, which is on page 42, it talks about increasing the base rate to 44.43. And so I guess the question is whether or not there was discussion, and I don't know that you resolved it by that motion, as to whether, as part of the language adjustment that was included within the motion, it was intended that that would also include a modification of the 44.43.
Yes, it was intended that in raising the tipping fee, it would raise the, it would inherently raise the fee that the landfill charges to people.
I thought we should just make that express. So yes. Is that the consensus of council, what you just
read? That is, and we did agree that the city manager and city attorney have the authority to modify this agreement, and we again supported that. So, but now we're crystal clear that that's what we'll be doing in that instance, and if there's something else you discover in the process, you're going to fix that too.
Well, crystal clear is always good. So
yes. And so no need for further action, Mr. City Attorney?
No, we're good.
Thank you. Then we will go on to the next item on the agenda, which is our updates from the city manager.
Boy, I think we're all out of practice tonight. Sorry about that. So the first item I want to talk about tonight is the Parents for Joy Playground. Pacific Eye Care has a give back challenge, and you thought that your responsibility was over for voting in 2018, but we are asking people to vote for the Pacific Eye Gives Back Challenge online voting contest, which is going on now through November 22nd. You can help raise money for the Parents for Joy Playground Project, which is one of 10 finalists this year in the Pacific Eye Care Challenge. They will donate a total of $10,000 to various local and deserving nonprofit organizations. Everyone can vote once per day through November 22nd for their favorite charity by going to Pacific Eye Care Gives Back Challenge on Facebook page or their website. And the local organization that receives the most votes will be given a $5,000 donation. Second place will receive $2,250, and third place will receive $1,000. So the Parents for Joy group has asked us to put in a plug for their project and the Joy Playground project so that we can get that fully constructed. There are a lot of other really good charities online, so it's a great a great program. So, again, you can vote once per day between now and November 22nd. Atascadero Lake Cleanup Day on October 27th. The Friends of the Atascadero Lake held another successful lake cleanup day with lots of local community volunteers who came out to assist in the effort to clean up the lake. A public works staff member from the city, and actually a lot of public works help and assistance went into this both before, during, and after to try and make this a success. So our public works guys worked along the volunteers to pick up the cuttings and haul them away, and there were more than 30 piles of brush removed from around the perimeter of the lake. As you know, that we have limits on what we are allowed to do and not allowed to do around the lake due to various permits that we need to require. But these guys do an amazing job trying to clean up as much as they can around there while still leaving the native habitat and other things that Fish and Wildlife and other agencies would like to see. So Pavilion on the Lake Holiday Boutique is coming up, a favorite event. So mark your calendars for the 13th annual Holiday Boutique. It will be held on Saturday, November 17th. That's this Saturday, from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. at the Pavilion. We'll have over 50 vendors for this one-day-only craft show where all of the items are handmade by the sellers. And there'll be lots of festive crafts and beautiful artistic creations. And it's a perfect opportunity to start your holiday shopping. Lots of very neat and creative things there to buy. There'll also be a great selection of food vendors, too, so don't miss out on this really unique and fun holiday shopping experience. We also have, on Saturday, it's going to be a busy Saturday, Taco Day on Traffic Way. So that's this November 17th, this Saturday, from 1 to 4 p.m., and you can eat your way down Traffic Way sampling tasty tacos while visiting the businesses and vendors along the way. You do not have to purchase a ticket this year to attend the event. Three blocks of Traffic Way will be closed so that everyone can safely enjoy their taco tasting. And there'll be live music, DJs, craft vendors, and the first ever 21 and over beer garden with beer and cider from Dead Oak Brewery and Bristol Cider House. Make sure to stick around as the judges determine the best taco with Mayor Tom O'Malley and Mayor-elect Heather Moreno. I do not envy you. Oh, and Charles is going to join in also. Boy, it's tough duty, but somebody has to do it, I'm sure. That's a fun event, and again, this year, you're not going to have to buy tickets to get the tacos. It'll be done a little bit different. So Light Up the Downtown begins on November 30th at 5:30 p.m. here at City Hall in the Sunken Gardens. The Atascadero Chamber of Commerce will start the event by hosting a downtown art and wine tour for only $20 a person, which includes a wine glass and numerous wine tastings throughout the downtown area with the participating merchants. At dusk, we will hold our very special free and family-friendly annual holiday lighting of City Hall, and then all of the kids can have their first visit with Santa. Everyone can enjoy some delicious hot chocolate, a complimentary tour of historic City Hall, holiday hayrides by Harris Stage Lines, and a spin around the Sunken Gardens in the Model A fire truck. So everyone's invited to bring their family and friends to kick off the holiday season at this free and very fun annual event. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. And our screens did go blank here. I don't know if that's... there we go. And I did want to say I will not be able to be a judge this year. I love Taco Day on Traffic Way. However, have the opportunity to go see Major O'Malley. Since there won't be a Mayor O'Malley anymore, I will be able to go up and see our son for Thanksgiving. So I would have to see if someone else can cover that duty. Maybe the chief, who has a big appetite, since we have two, or any other council members, that would be great. And we have Councilman Moreno.
I just want to thank the downtown bid. They did a great job on the, well, and Terry as well. You always have to add Terry in there. For the trick-or-treat on Entrada, that was amazing this year. I got there at 5 o'clock. Mayor O'Malley and I were judges for the costume contest, and we went into Pho for You and got a little appetizer just to tide us over. Got out at 5:30, and it was packed. And it just grew bigger and bigger. There was a wonderful costume contest, just, you know, kids adorable as usual. Families, too. Pets? Oh, my God. You should have seen the pony dressed as a cowboy, was it? Or a sheriff? I mean, seriously. It was, yeah, a pony as a sheriff. But amazing, just packed, and people having so much fun. So just good job, Terry, and the downtown crew. You guys did a great job.
Thank you. Mayor, I was going to comment that Tescadero Lakeside cleanup was particularly successful for me because I did not get poison oak this year.
Excellent.
So,
see, being on council, you grow thicker skin. Any other comments on the management report? Thank you. We'll next go on to community forum, which is an opportunity for any of you to speak to all of us on any item that is not on the agenda but under our jurisdiction. And before we begin, I do want to acknowledge the presence of our two councilwomen-elect, Ms. Heather Newsom and Ms. Susan Funk, continuing the tradition of sitting in on city council meetings when you were in the campaign season. Glad to see you back here. And I want to make sure you know your two future best friends need to be the city manager and the city attorney, the only two employees you actually have. And they will keep you out of trouble and sane in the years to come. Great resources and my opportunity to compliment them both, but it's very helpful to check in any questions you have. I know every new council member really wants to make a public point and say something, and as I had to mention to some other new council members in the past, never ask a question you don't already know the answer to, because sometimes it actually saves time for all of us and our community when you do your homework ahead of time. And I know you both will, because you've exercised that already. But again, your two future best friends, city manager and city attorney. With that, I'll open it up to the public. Again, for any of you that have anything to speak on an item not on the agenda, please come forward. Just state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Richard Mowen. I live on Portola Road, and I'm here to talk about calming of the corridor. I thought a very appropriate title for this article here. As I was telling the mayor earlier, I don't go out much on Friday and Saturday nights, but this last Friday night, my wife and I went out downtown, and we were impressed with the number of people that we saw walking in the, you know, on the sidewalks and around the town area there. But then I had this vision. I think I, you know, saw what calming of the corridor really meant. We were just down Entrada a few steps, and there was a car waiting for another car to pull out so they could take their parking spot. Well, that car was waiting there. Then pretty soon another car came, and pretty soon another car came. The people in the car in the stall were still sitting there. They had their backup lights on. Then here comes a car from traffic or El Camino wanting to make a right-hand turn onto Entrada. It had to stop there. I thought, that's what a single lane will do to Atascadero. I'm not for improving the calming of the city, our traffic patterns, but I think there could be better ways to do it. I think this article, I'm only looking at it, the rendition of it, I'm assuming that is the sunken gardens that are over there, but having people diagonally parking and then parallel parking into one lane of traffic with people trying to go either north and south, to me looks like maybe calming of the traffic, but maybe a little driver anxiety it would create, because you're waiting for a person to pull out of a parking spot that you don't want, but someone in front of you does, and those cars do back up. If you have, any of you have ever been in a shopping center's parking lot and tried to back out from a diagonal spot, you know how considerate the people that are coming down the lane trying to get out of there are. They just shoot by you whether you're halfway out or not. They don't care. It's their right to go by. I can't see that happening here. I can see car after car backing up and backing up. And as I say, a little driver anxiety hits when that happens. If we want to calm the traffic on El Camino, maybe a couple banners, calm down traffic, save the city an awful lot of money just to put those banners, or some very slight speed bumps in the downtown area. But I really am not in favor, and I don't have a business there here in town, but I don't have a real positive outlook on the future of this. The other thing I would say is, you know, parallel parking. Oh, thank you very much for your time.
Well, finish your thought if you'd like. It should be a short evening, we hope. So, finish
your
thought.
Parallel parking, and I'm only speaking for myself. When I'm going to parallel park, if I don't have anybody pushing behind me, I can usually do it. But I know that once someone comes up and they're waiting for you to parallel park, get in and out, maybe I hit the curb and I have to go back out. It happened here just not too long ago that's exactly what I did. I hit the curb, I had to go out, but the car zipped around me and almost took my front bumper off. I can see a potential lot of traffic problems with this scenario that you've presented here. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We'll have our city engineer address that and the numerous studies that have taken place and will continue to take place with more public comment coming on those. So thank you for your input. Welcome, next speaker.
Good evening, council and staff. Jim Wilkins, president of the Tascadero Historical Society. I thought I'd enlighten the community on a fundraiser we're going to do to help put a roof on that house that we did calm traffic that night when we moved it through town. Nobody was going around us for two blocks either way. So if you want to calm traffic, hire me to move a house every other month.
What was the time you were moving that, though?
We hit town about 10:15.
Yeah, it was fairly calm. Yeah.
Not in the a.m. We need to put a roof on that house, so we're doing a fundraiser at Pear Valley, and we're calling it Raise the Roof. We actually already raised the roof by lifting the whole house up and taking part of the top off and putting it back on. Now it's down. We'd like to make it weathertight. So we'd like to have the community come out. It's a good way to enjoy the holidays in between two of our major winter holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas. It's on December 1st, and we're doing a buffet. They're providing the wine for us. We'll have a silent auction, and it's a very nice venue out there at Pear Valley. So enjoy us. Come out. I'll leave these flyers for the chief. And if you got one, I mailed some to you. I'd like Laura and Jerry to get one over there because I didn't have their emails. And when you get done shopping on Saturday, come down to the Taco Days because we're helping host the beer and cider gardens. And it'll be a good way to wash down that credit card bill you'll be getting on Monday. So thanks for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak on an item? Welcome.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Mayor-elect, and esteemed council members. My name is Dan Feldman, and I'm the community liaison for Atheists United San Luis Obispo. Before I roll into my regular statement, I just wanted to congratulate the newly elected and the soon to be seated and those retiring. That's like my dream. So congratulations to all of you. AU SLO is a vibrant and active community organization with over 600 members all over San Luis Obispo County. One of AU SLO's missions is to advocate for the separation of church and state, and that's why I'm here tonight. Just want to remind you that an increasing number of your constituents are not religious. They may not be atheists, but they're not very religious either. Please remember that we are here working, raising families, paying taxes, shopping, voting, and yes, we are concerned with the intrusions of religion into our secular government because we believe these intrusions often result in poor and ineffective public policy like abstinence-only education or no public policy at all to address critical issues like climate change. It should be clear to all that religion and government do what they do best when we keep them apart. And I think Atascadero does a great job of that. Many in our community will be celebrating holidays this month and next month, including many atheists. That's because for us, like many Americans, the holidays are really about universal human values like celebrating community, family, and caring for others. You don't need to be religious to cherish these virtues. And the more we make the holiday season about our shared ideals and less about particular religions, the more we make it a time of unity and goodwill everyone can embrace. So from Atheists United to the fine people serving on this city council and those about to, and to all the good citizens of Atascadero, we wish you a happy and inspirational holiday season. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Seeing none approach, we'll close the public comment portion. And we might just do a quick update on the traffic studies going on, as well as the future discussion opportunities there will be.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. This is one of the projects that actually is getting a lot of buzz in town, and pretty exciting, really, for the downtown. Really different, exciting, or I guess maybe pessimistic by some folks too. But we're going to be we're developing that corridor plan and planning on bringing that to the city council one of the next two meetings, we hope. And you know, we'll have some information on addressing some of those safety concerns that we had last time we presented. One with the parallel or angle cars backing up into the bike lane, as well as some of the congestion that that might have, narrow corridor lanes with emergency vehicles and whatnot. So a lot of that will be discussed at the next meeting, or one of the next two meetings. We hope to have that back at the city council. So I would encourage a resident to keep an eye out for the agenda and come to that meeting.
Thank you. Well, seeing no other community forum items, we'll move on to our regularly scheduled agenda, item C1, management report, approve local agency management plan for on-site wastewater treatment systems or septic systems, and we'll have our city engineer leading that as well.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. Speaking of exciting topics, I'm not sure what's more exciting. Actually, this has big implications, this item, to the city, and I'm happy to present it tonight. There's been a lot of work that's gone into this program. Just a little background, the Water Resources Control Board adopted new septic system standards. They stopped short of calling them regulations, and they call them more guidelines. But they are like regulations because they impose them on us, but no additional funding. But they adopted these a few years back. They went into effect in May 2018. Most jurisdictions that have on-site wastewater treatment systems, or OWTSs as they're known as, otherwise known as septic systems, are mandated to comply with this new policy that the state came out with. And jurisdictions have the option of developing their own standards through this LAMP process, or Local Agency Management Program. The OWTS policy that the state came out with is really a one-size-fits-all. It was really in response to a lot of communities that really smaller communities that didn't have qualified staff to review a lot of these on-site septic system designs or oversee it, their construction. So they kind of came back, you know, as sometimes state agencies and the federal government do, with, okay, these are the, you know, very conservative design standards that everybody is going to comply with. It really didn't take into account cities' unique characteristics. But just really a one-size-fits-all, single set of criteria. The three or four actually five with the tier zero. Tiers are right here. Tier two is what we're calling the LAMP. This is for new and replacement on-site wastewater treatment systems. Really, currently, we're currently underneath the state's policy, and we've been actually approving septic designs, but they've had to comply with the state's policy. So this tier one policy, which is really requires the leach fields and other things to be larger than what we've been accustomed to. Very conservative. They don't allow alternative systems or traditional systems here in the city of Atascadero, like seepage pits. You know, those are barred from being installed. So they've this tier two or LAMP allows the city to have some of this flexibility. Some of the other highlights: provides local control for the administration, permitting, regulation. It, as I mentioned, provides some alternatives to just the standard conventional leach field. It formalizes some of the best management practices that we're already doing that but don't have down, for instance, horizontal and vertical setbacks. It uses some qualitative, quantitative, and physical conditions to really support the siting criteria. This LAMP process really let us get to know our city a lot better with a lot of the geology, soil conditions, steepness. It really helped us hone in on what really works and what doesn't. It also addresses the unique nature of Atascadero. We're a small urban but large rural character. Half our city is on septic systems. Half is on the city sewer. It's not cost-effective to sewer the entire city as much as we'd like to, but the big lots on the west side and all the hilly, I mean, we already have 13 lift stations. I mean, we'd have probably triple that if we sewered the whole town. But then the bottom line is it really continues to protect the groundwater and surface water quality. This city has done a great job at that. The water company we've partnered with, we've got 100 years of track record of successfully protecting the groundwater and the surface water. The LAMP contents, there's six sections to it. These are the sections. This is the same as last time in October when this was last brought to the council. There have been some changes since that time. There's been a lot of back and forth with the water, regional water quality control staff that that is mandated to approve this through their board. So we've been working with them, lots of back and forth, lots of meetings, lots of emails, lots of correspondence with them, but they've been very cooperative, and the final product I think is a good product for the city, and it also meets their requirements. Some of the updates since October when we last brought it, there's been more discussion with setbacks and vertical separation of groundwater, as well as horizontal separation. So a lot of this has to do with, perculation rates and how, different systems and how close can you get to that groundwater. Basically, you want to leave a certain distance to the groundwater to allow treatment of that. The wastewater that comes out of the septic tanks. There's also been a lot of discussion about alternative OWTSs in Section 4.11, specifically with supplemental treatment conditions required for BOD, which is biological oxygen demand. It's basically tells you how strong the wastewater is. TSS is a total suspended solids. TN is total nitrogen and disinfection. So table 4.11.1 and 4.11.2 talk about some of the requirements when the supplemental treatment is going to be needed. The other thing is subdivision lot sizing. This was kind of a hot topic that we had back in October. Section 4.12 talks about it. This was something we worked pretty hard with figuring out with the Water Quality Control Board staff. Basically, the lot size for subdivisions is based on annual average precipitation. So the higher precipitation, the smaller the lots you can have. That's basically what it is, and vice versa. But table 4.12.1 has some of the precipitation ranges and the minimum lot sizes that you need. Basically, on the east side of town, you have less rainfall. On the west side, you have more rainfall. Really, there's other things that factor into lot size as well. Probably more restrictive than the precipitation is our zoning ordinances and land use ordinances with lot splits. This doesn't just apply to subdivisions as the MAP Act defines it, five lots or more, but this actually applies to a parcel lot line adjustment or lot split or things like this. So, but on the west side, or sorry, east side of town where it gets probably the most tight, there's probably less than 10 properties that are really affected by this. So it has a very minimum disruption to existing policies. And then the on-site wastewater treatment systems in degraded basins, section 4.13, was also added. This was a requirement by the Water Board that we add this language. And I can get into some of these a little bit more if you like, or I might just wait for questions to come up. Some of the amendments since the packet went out, we kind of dug into this a little bit. Believe it or not, we're still working out some of these details with the Water Board staff. Right now, it's scheduled to go to their board on December 6th and 7th in SLO. So before we can actually make this and use this LAMP document, we need to have them approve it, the Water Board, the actual Water Board. So they have a meeting on December 6th. We're trying to get this to the council for one last review, see if you have anything else, and then we'll send it over to the Water Board tomorrow. But just going through, there's a lot of quality control that we actually went through and looked. So there's typos, maybe some tables mismatched. I'm sure some of you caught that, but we went through this in pretty good detail. A couple of things. One, we eliminated Exhibit 2.84 and 2.10.1. So those are in the, you should have a full-size copy. Those aren't really needed. Those were a remnant from the last draft. So those will not be part of the final LAMP. We added a part zero for definitions, so just gave that a section. We added a paragraph to section 3.1 to clarify the role of the engineering division as technical support for the LAMP activities and really being the ones to look at connections to the municipal sewer system. And then, as I mentioned, various quality control checks and edits to the table of contents, and just making sure that, you know, exhibits are named as they are. You know, there's consistency there, so a lot of that quality control occurred. There was a number of various typos and clerical errors that we caught, too. I mean, this document was a back-and-forth document for the last 9 months, so there's a lot of modifications to it. And then also we added section 4.14, which is required information that they are mandating us to have. And this was already covered from language and in section 2.8 on page 26 underneath the impaired streams. So we already had this language, they just wanted in a separate section. And this is the language that is added. It's basically requires us that if there's any degradation or impairments to any surface waters in town, that the city will work with the Water Board to, you know, identify, and it's determined that the septic systems are contributing to that degradation, that we will work with the Water Board to identify you know, those boundaries that it might be imposing. And then also, if there's not a total maximum daily load study done, that we will develop what's called an advanced protection management program with the established TMDLs. So it's language that they're requiring. I know the city manager was on, this was just today that we hashed this out. It was one of those things where, you know, what's the risk? And I think we've been in a good relationship with them so far, and I expect that to continue going forward. We're going to have annual reports that we have to give to them, so there'll be regular conversations and discussions with them on the LAMP. But this is the language that was added this afternoon to the LAMP. The next steps would be tonight the council adopt the LAMP through the draft resolution. It wouldn't go into effect until the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board approves it, which is scheduled currently for December 6. The resolution indicates that the LAMP would become effective the day after, so we're estimating December 7th if it gets on the agenda for that December 6 meeting. Then we'll have some follow-up as well, so we'll need to clean up the municipal code. Right now, actually, there's not a lot of cleanup needed. Primarily, it's in the planning contents of the municipal code that references some of the septic standards. But the building division had already cleaned it up a few years back because they just reverted to the plumbing code with a lot of their pertinent sections. But there is still some cleanup that we'll need to do. We'll need to make reference to the LAMP document that supersedes other requirements in the municipal code. So we'll be looking at this early next year. There'll be some education and outreach that we're going to want to do, you know, various press releases, you know, updated on the website. You know, we'll have some of the stakeholder and community meetings. You know, maybe we'll have a meeting. Some of the ideas is have a meeting just for contractors and vendors that are working in this industry, as well as engineering firms that, you know, are designing a lot of these OWTSs. We'll have brochures and handouts that we'll create to have available at the front counter or available online. And then just ongoing education, too, you know, as we learn more. Every 5 years, we're going to have to give the Regional Water Quality Control Board an evaluation of how our system is working. So, you know, that's the ongoing education that we'll have to do and as we learn more about how these are all working. So tonight, the recommendations, authorize staff to submit the final draft local agency management plan as amended to Regional Water Quality Control Board for approval. Adopt the draft resolution adopting the City of Atascadero Local Agency Management Program as amended as the new city standards for on-site wastewater treatment systems effective the day after approval of the LAMP by the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And then the third one, this project went a lot longer than we thought and a lot more back and forth with the Water Board to substantiate our policies and practices. So we did incur a little bit more cost to it with our consultant, but authorize the Administrative Services Director to appropriate an additional $15,000 in general fund reserves toward the LAMP development budget to cover additional costs associated with the LAMP completion for a total budget of $65,000. Just a comparison, I know the county is pursuing a LAMP. They're probably still a ways off, and I know they've got at least probably $150,000 into there so far. So I'm happy to report that we're at the finish line and we're ready to get this done. So with that, I can take any questions you have.
Thank you. First, could you read off for me the principal staff involved in working on this plan? Because I know you were and another city engineer.
Sure. Ryan Hayes, who's deputy public works director, principal civil engineer, was really, I had him really spearheading this. He did a great job. A lot of back and forth. The city manager was involved quite a bit, too. Mike Bertaccini, who's our he's an associate engineer and does a lot of the development review. He's really the guy that developers and homeowners talk to on a daily basis down at the counter. He's the one reviewing a lot of the septic design standards. Obviously, Director Dunsmore and his team, Dave Mielhausen, the building official, you know, the various planners. So there was a lot of people that really contributed to this program, as well as Blaine with Monsoon Consultants.
Well, I did want to especially acknowledge you, Nick, and Ryan, Mike, Phil, and David, those names in particular. I know I don't think our community really realizes how much work you guys have put into this and how many bullets we dodged on this one. This could have been an extremely expensive alternative had we not got this plan approved. You really protected our community, and I'll say a little bit more briefly before we go to public comment on that, but your team really deserves a lot of credit. We're going to go to council questions next, and we will have a lot of time for public input on this item. First, I have Councilwoman Moreno, followed by Councilwoman Fonzie.
Well, you stole my thunder. But I think we all echo that. It's something that when you see the activities that we have in sight, you see Tamale Festival, or you see dancing in the streets, or you see all the things we do, and you're like, Terry, such a great job, or you look at La Plaza being approved, or the Bridgewalk Hotel, and you think, you know, Phil and his team, and you can see those things and get excited about them as a community. This is something that, unless it actually hits you as a homeowner, and you see that suddenly a septic system is going to cost you twice as much, or you have to hook up to sewer, and suddenly it's hitting your pocket, you wouldn't know that. And so you guys are sort of like the, you know, quiet behind the scenes doing the work that is so important. And I know that John Neal John Neal and Eric Gobler have been helpful. I know that I spoke with Eric earlier today, and he's going to be going to the meeting on the 6th. Will John Neal from the water company also be attending?
We're going to check with John and see if he's available for that day.
Okay.
I know Blaine, our consultant, is going to actually be out of town for that meeting. Otherwise, he would have gone too.
Okay. Let's see, what was I going to say? So I'm glad to hear you saying about getting the word out to the septic contractors, because I'm thinking now every city is going to be slightly different. And so I'm hoping that they have the most up-to-date information so that they're informing homeowners and not giving them bad information that then has them spending money that they don't need to, or going, you know, taking out oak trees because if suddenly they need a leach field four times the size when really they don't. So I'm glad to hear that you're saying that. What about working with realtors for, you know, home buyers? I mean, when we were first-time home buyers, you kind of just asked around about how to deal with a septic tank, and I love the simple little, you know, how to deal with your septic system that you have here that'll be from Public Works, and I'm thinking going through realtors is one way to help get that word out for especially new home buyers that maybe haven't been familiar with septic tanks.
I think, you know, that's one of the community meetings that we can have is, you know, we can tailor them to any group that's actually deals with a lot of this. So maybe we have a realtor meeting. I mean, there's a lot of realtors in town that work in town. And,
just a few.
So we can have one specific for that to address theirs instead of having like a big, you know, group meeting with contractors, engineers, realtors, and community members. Maybe have more focus groups, you know, that can really allow us to help them hone in on the new regulations.
Yeah. And then 4.14, because I had seen that in partial draft form, and then we kind of put it up there. And so I want to make sure that I'm clear. It's like one, maybe five, six signs down if a body of water designated as significantly degraded as a result of on-site wastewater treatment system, the city will develop the APMP, and in the absence of an approved TMDL, which remind me of what the TMDL is now.
Total maximum daily load.
Daily
so this
load.
Is a study that they do, and they determine, you know, what the constituents of concern or contamination that's making it impaired, where they're coming from, and then, you know, what benchmark they're using to limit how much of that loading goes into that particular stream.
Okay, and so do we have an approved TMDL?
No, that would occur after the waterway is designated impaired in accordance with
specifically by the use of an OTWS.
Correct.
Okay. OWTS. I was joking with the city manager. It'll be easier for me to say ROUSs for any of you Princess Bride fans out there. just rolls off the tongue more easily. Okay. So that doesn't have, so basically this is something that's never happened before. We've never had a degraded waterway due to an on-site, to a septic system. And so if this does happen, this is the procedure that we would go through.
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
Right now we have two impaired waterways in town. One's the Salinas River and one's the Tascadero Creek, but they're not degraded based on urban effects, so they don't fall underneath these categories. We don't have to do anything special with that regard.
Okay, because it seemed like in reading this is almost in other places, especially in the paragraph right before it. So I'm wondering, like, am I missing something? Is there some legal language in here that I'm not quite picking up on?
So 4.13, which is in the LAMP document that's included with your packet, actually talks about groundwater. Okay. This one actually talks about surface water.
Okay.
So that's the difference between the two.
So groundwater and, not on the surface versus...
Right. Lakes, rivers, streams,
got
things
it.
Like that is 4.14. Actually, it's very similar. This one for 4.14 is APMP, Advanced Protection Management Program. Mm-hmm. The previous one is Advanced Groundwater
Protection Management Program.
So okay. Very, very similar. Okay. And this is standard language that they required as of Monterey and Santa Barbara County. We actually were able to tweak the 4.13, negotiate that we collectively identify those areas, so it's not just a blanket approach, but we wanted to make sure that, you know, there was a substantiating process that had to go through rather than just, you know, a proclamation that the waterways are impaired.
Okay. And then I have one last question. Sometimes technology is not the easiest to... Oh, here it is. On page 97, and so it's a proximity to existing sanitary sewer collection systems. So this is something I've been particularly interested in over the 2 years that we've been discussing this. And so I discussed this with the city manager, and I'm still trying to grasp what could be a physical infeasibility. So we're talking about a septic system that if somebody wants to replace that system but is within that 200 feet of an existing sanitary sewer, but you say, hey, the feasibility of it financially or physically, but really what is their definition? So I appreciate that at least the financial piece of it has been made specific. So it's, you know, a doubling. If it's double the cost to connect a sewer, then, you know, you can go ahead and do the other. But what would they consider physical infeasibility? I mean, I know what I read here, but excessive maintenance costs or concerns, who determines that?
So that would be, this is actually something that's in the municipal code right now, and it's somewhat reflected here. And this right now is determined at the staff level. Usually the city engineer looks at that, and that's one of the revisions I clarified a little bit earlier here. Where is it? That third bullet item there, just, you know, identifying the engineering division, you know, their technical support for the LAMP review and those things. And then also, like, having, being principally charged with determining the municipal sanitary sewer connections. So that would be something that we determined what a physical infeasibility could be is, let's say, you have, right now we have actually have city sewer on San Gabriel, right off 41, going over the bridge to the north. Let's say, and it could be extended up there. Let's say there's a house that's situated a quarter mile off the road. I mean, that, and it's on 5 acres or something like that. I mean, that seems kind of like, you know, you're a quarter mile off the road. Now you know, and maybe you're lower than the road or something like that. So that would be kind of a hardship, a physical hardship.
That almost even seems like it falls under the financial feasibility.
It would, yeah.
But let's say you said lower than the road. So let's say there's a 30% slope going down to the house, and you have to have a sump pump. And so that could possibly be considered a physical.
It could. It possibly could be considered that. You know, sometimes it has to do with the frontages. So, you know, this is one of the things that I'll be bringing back, you know, as part of the ordinance, OWTS ordinance, early next year. One of the things I think that the council needs to decide as well is what is that fairness. So say you have, you know, some lots in town that could have a sewer extended and a system fails, and it's, you know, a 60-foot, you know, frontage for that lot, and, you know, it's already extended out to the one side lot line, and right now our policy is that you have to extend it to your to the other farthest lot line, so basically cover your entire parcel frontage. And then that's accessible to the next property. You know, if their system were to fail or it's a vacant property or whatever, then they'd have to keep going. That way you're not paying for any kind of sewer extension in front of your neighbor's property. You're doing it just in front of your property. Well, some of these frontages on the west side in particular are very big. You know, they could be 150, 200 feet. So, you know, that becomes, you know, really a expensive sewer extension compared to another one that might only be 50 feet. So these are some of the things that kind of work into that. And it's just kind of, it seems a little subjective, but, you know, it's we try to be really fair with the property owners and when it makes sense for them to extend it. And you know what, honestly, a lot of them want to extend it just because they don't want to deal with on-site septic systems. Right now we're dealing with one on Portola where they're extending the sewer up Portola. They're actually going past their neighbor's house and they're extending it up to their property. And they'll probably file for a sewer reimbursement agreement. So if any of the other three neighbors connect, they'll get reimbursed in the future.
Okay. Thank you. I know it's important to me, and I appreciate you going through that. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have questions from Councilwoman Fonzi, followed by Councilmember Burbeau.
Thank you. I appreciate the report, and I especially appreciate the information you provided to the entire council with color graphs and pictures and so forth. This is very helpful. I was wondering if you could explain for the public in particular what this will mean for them. Let's say they live in a home, they want to sell it. Usually they have to have a septic inspection and pumping. And if something's wrong, how will things be different for them after this is adopted?
Sure. It's probably a lot of it's just really more accountability and it's not really transparency, but more accountability. This document really has a lot more detail than we do right now in the municipal code. So if somebody, say, had their, like when I bought my house, you know, I had my septic tank and leach field test and everything else, and it tested out fine, thank goodness. And but let's say there's a baffle wall in the septic tank that is degraded. So they'll have to, you know, they should get that fixed, and who's ever, whatever contractor has, you know, inspected that, whether it's Clay's or Ingram and Green or somebody else, would notify them that they really need that baffle wall fixed. The good thing is with this lamp, there's minor repairs, like things like repairing a baffle wall, repairing a crack lid or leaky cover on a tank, or really things that are associated with the septic tank. Most of those are considered minor repairs and don't require a feasibility report and, you know, a plot plan and all these other things. So we've tried to make it really easy on those minor repairs and those routine things that most people have, you know, most people at some point with a septic system have to deal with. It's really the leach field that, you know, how you disperse of that sewage coming from the septic tank. That's really the bread and butter of this document. And, you know, that's really where a lot of the different alternatives can be employed, you know, whether it's seepage pit or, you know, conventional leach field, whether it's a mound system or some other things that we have now access to be able to approve. So really it's everybody's a little different, but I would encourage them to, you know, once they have that report from their contractor, to contact the city if there is something wrong, and we'll be more than happy to walk them through that.
Well, it's my understanding sometime in the past they had said that we were going to have an overflow tank in case there was a problem with the septic tank, with an alarm and other things, that we're kind of going through the rumor mill. Have those gone away now?
Well, those are actually one of the things that Councilmember Moreno mentioned, you know, like a what's called a grinder pump station, where you are connected to the city sewer, but you're at a lower elevation than the road or what the sewer might be buried at, and you need to lift, you know, when you gravity flow at it from your house out to a holding tank. Well, if that holding tank is lower in elevation like the city sewer, then you need to raise that water up. It's like a mini lift station, and most of those are called they're like package, you know, duplex stations, they call them. It works almost just like a lift station. There's usually two pumps in there that alternate for duplicity. But it also is a grinder, so it chews everything up and then discharges it up to the city gravity sewer line. So, yeah, that's one of the things, like the overflows.
It was kind of like a horror story. When
I've always wanted my own private lift station. Yeah.
And also on the outreach to the public, I'm concerned. I looked at this potential areas for future expansion and wondered how that would be presented to the public. Let's say someone wants to move here and they want to know that they're getting a house that's going to cost a certain amount for years to come, but they're within this potential zone and they find out after the fact, when it's too late, when they bought the house, that they're in a potential expansion zone and may need to hook up to the sewer if the Regional Water Quality Control Board changes the standards. How are we going to address that with the public?
Sure, that's a great question. The information contained in this report was kind of a preliminary snapshot that our consultant looked at. These five areas that are identified are potential areas. You know, they're areas that we really probably should keep on the horizon in case, you know, that there's an opportunity for grant funding or some kind of other funding to do that. We've had another consultant, that Mike Nunley and Associates, that is doing a lot of our planning for the wastewater treatment plan and master plan, take a harder look at this and do some analysis with our sewer model. We actually have a sewer model that analyzes flows and everything else. He looked at that to see what the cost would be and really dialed in a lot more. And that's something I'd like to present to the council next time we bring that master plan back for the wastewater treatment plant and collection system. So we got a little bit more there. We'll talk about maybe how we end up paying for something like that if we were to pursue it. There's a lot of state grants that can become available or other loan opportunities on the state level that have zero or low interest loans as well. But how that gets paid for and how that gets divvied up is, you know, that's there's various ways that that's done, but, you know, there's options there as well.
Last question. Councilmember Moreno touched on contacting realtor groups and talking about how to take care of your septic tank, which is good information. But I'm wondering if we need to talk to them about these potential areas because it may be a disclosure that they need to be aware of.
Yeah, I can check on that and see. I know this is just an idea right now, and it's, you know, something that we really wanted to have as part of this to let the water board know that we're looking at these areas, that we've done this analysis, that we have some priorities. A lot of these areas actually have been identified 30 years ago, believe it or not. And some of these areas would be easy to do, such as River Gardens. I mean, that's probably, you know, a really easy one because it's pretty flat. They're by the municipal wells. They're smaller lots. They really should probably be sewered back there. So how we do this in a fair and equitable manner without, you know, bankrupting people, whether it's, you know, an assessment over 10 or 15 years or what it might be, I'm not sure yet.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. And Councilmember Burbeau.
Thank you. And some of my questions have sort of been addressed through the other council members. On a couple slides back, I think you addressed this question, but I'm not sure. Maybe that one. I was interested in, you know, we have lot size, then there's precipitation that addresses, you know, I guess the more precipitation you have, you can have a septic system on a smaller lot because I assume the water is going to disperse the effluent better or something like that. This subdivision lot sizing. So my question that I'd written down was lot size versus precipitation versus our current zoning. This section 412, is that addressing kind of the question that if via their chart, you know, the amount of precipitation implies that you have to have a lot size of X, but our zoning for the area is different than that? And if it doesn't address that, how do we reconcile that potential difference between, let's say we have an area that allows for a half-acre lot, but based on the precipitation, it says it should be three-quarters of an acre or an acre or whatever?
I think the most restrictive property would dictate in that case, and I can let Director Dunsmore weigh in, but let's say, for instance, there's a parcel that's 3 acres, and they want to split the lot, and it's an area that gets 17 inches of rain. So if you look at table 4.12.1 on page 133, that translates to a allowable density of 2-acre lot. So you have a 3-acre lot, you're trying to split it, you know, it's vacant, let's say you're trying to split it into two parcels, and if you do it equal, it's 1.5 or whatever. But there might be some zoning requirements that don't allow it because, you know, our general plan, the further out you go from the city center, the larger the lot sizes you must have for minimum lot size. And I don't know, Phil, maybe right. You want to weigh in on that.
My concern is obviously that if our zoning says half acre, and I buy an acre lot and I think I can build two houses and two septic systems, you know, and you think I can, but then, you know, the public works guys go, wait, the lamp says, you know, you need 3/4 of an acre. And effectively, does this potentially override our zoning or affect property owners in our community in that way?
It would override the zoning.
Yes.
I mean, that would be one of the things.
So that's, talk about disclosure, I mean, that's a really important piece of information. And would that, so that would apply to existing property owners? I mean, let's say I already own this.
No, this would be for any
No, I don't mean existing system, but let's say I own an acre vacant lot in a half acre zone part of town, and I want to build, you know, I want to split it and build two houses. Would this go, well, sorry, zoning said yes, LAMP says no, you can't do it, which would severely degrade my property value if that were the case.
That would govern.
That would apply. So if you want to subdivide it, this doesn't change the zoning. It just means you can't have two units with septic. So if you wanted to bring sewer to your spot that does that, then this doesn't apply at all. What the LAMP says is that if you want to subdivide it and you want to have, you know, two approved units on it, that it has to adhere to this for the septic systems. Yeah.
Well, that's a very big deal, though, because that is essentially telling somebody who owns an, you know, in my example, an acre-sized lot today that thinks they could split it and build two houses with two septic systems, this says, no, you can't. And that's a severe...
The state OWTS says, no, you can't.
No, and I understand. I think it's important for, you know, our citizens to understand that, because we're going to be the bad guys in that scenario, and this is being driven by a state agency. But that's a very big deal. You know, I mean, I can just envision the scenarios where somebody's in for a very rude awakening because of this requirement. And essentially, I mean, it's almost like a taking. It's certainly a taking of their property value if this applies. And we, the city, you guys as a staff, are going to be stuck as the bearer of bad news. So,
Yeah, there's okay. we actually looked at what this would affect as far as, like, we did a lot of analysis for the water board and just internally, too, just to know how does this affect our city and the private property owners, because, I mean, that's ultimately what we're looking out after. And there was very few parcels that this actually impacted. It was like probably less than a dozen or so, like 10.
I think it was 10. Yeah, I heard you mention a number of parcels, and I wasn't sure if it was addressing that circumstance. And since it sounds like it is, and that's just such a small number, is there any imperative or reason that we should, you know, notify such parcel owners that they are, that their property and their property rights, in effect, are affected by this state-mandated plan that we have to come up with?
Right, and it's keep in mind, this is if they want to split their lots.
No, and I understand, and that's why it affects the whole set of circumstances, a relatively few number of lots. But if you're one of those people, you're going to be very upset.
Right.
And you're initially going to be very upset with the city.
Right.
You're not going to be upset with this obscure body out there that you never heard of.
Right, and you know, we're the messenger, obviously, and sometimes the messenger gets it. In this case, we'll probably get it. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, there's, you know, with the map, you know, the map, you know, parcel map process and other things, you know, they need to get those approvals anyways. And sometimes, you know, the zoning will govern, and sometimes this will govern. I'm guessing this will govern, you know, probably much less than when the zoning would govern.
Okay. And along those lines, and I think Council Member Fonzi sort of was asking this question in terms of potential costs to property owners or homeowners with existing systems. I'm looking in terms of folks trying to build and then, you know, having to install new systems. What are the additional costs, if you will, and perhaps it's all just circumstantial, compared to current way of or previous way of doing business?
For a conventional system, it's going to be about the same. Okay. There's really no difference, to be honest. It's going to be when you're looking at when you're forced to have to do supplemental treatment. So I'm going to use a seepage pit. I know some of you on the council have seepage pits. If you have a current seepage pit and it fails or whatever, you can, and you show that you have, you know, the physical, you know, properties to be able to build more seepage pits, you'll be able to do that. If you're building on a property that is vacant and not developed, and you're building a house, let's say, and you want to use a seepage pit, you know, new seepage pits per this lamp, and this is something that, you know, we tried not to have to do. But that seepage pit's going to require some supplemental treatment if that's the only leach field design that you'll be able to accommodate. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be, it's going to impact more maybe the newer homes and the unbuilt properties more so than existing properties.
Okay, and it sounds like, I mean, depending on the circumstances and what's required, especially if it's an alternative treatment system, those can become fairly pricey.
They can, yes. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, distance to groundwater, percolation mm-hmm. rates, mm-hmm. things of that nature.
Gotcha. And speaking of that, I'm going to jump to what was going to be my last question in terms of, I mean, it wasn't distance to groundwater, but it was a combination of factors. This is on what was labeled page 248 of the agenda. This is parcel OWTS suitability classification. You know, green is 0 all the way up to red being 11. I'm assuming that green is good and red is bad in terms of suitability.
That's one of the exhibits that we yanked from the report just because that was one that was in the initial draft and we decided was not really necessary. But yes, that's basically, and that's a very high altitude picture that's looking at steepness, that's looking at percolation, that's looking at depth to groundwater, distance to, you know, these things. So usually on that map, the lower the number, the better, the more suitable.
I just noticed it seemed like there's some green in the areas that were considered as potential expansion areas for the sewer, that part. Surprised me in the sense that if on this map they look like they're suitable, highly suitable for ODBTS, it doesn't seem like they'd be in a potential expansion area, unless I'm misunderstanding what the potential, what caused something to be put into the potential expansion area.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, you know, those five areas were identified decades ago, and it was kind of funny when they came up again, we found some old information. It's like, oh my gosh, these are almost identical to, I mean, these old timer, you know, guys, right. Contractors that work in this are the sharpest guys that you'll find and the most knowledgeable. But basically a lot of that had to do not just with that map or suitability, but, you know, economic, you know, cost to do it. So if it was in a kind of a flat area, you didn't have to build a lift station. There are smaller lots. You could, you know, get a lot more homes hooked up per lineal foot of sewer main.
Potential availability was a driver as opposed to suitability.
Right. And you know, where the sewer was extended to already and how readily available to hook that.
Because I did note that in Area 1, the potential cost per parcel was $31,000, and the rest of them, it was roughly $15,000.
Right.
And obviously, those are substantial numbers. My last question, you know, it took you guys a lot of time to put this together and go back and forth with Regional Water Quality Control Board to come up with something that would pass muster with them. You know, preserve water quality and at the same time, hopefully try to minimize the impact on our property owners. What, in terms of going forward, what do you see as the administrative time required by either yourself or the folks in community development to implement?
No, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked that because I was going to touch base on that because I knew that would be one of the questions that you might be thinking. Really, by adopting and putting this lamp into play, I mean, right now we're still reviewing septic designs and we're still inspecting them and permitting and everything else. Really, based on the pre-May 2018 world, it's going to be just that reporting piece that's going to be, you know, the additional burden. But it just seems like that's a trend. I mean, we tend to be reporting, you know, if it's not to the water board, it's to somebody else, you know. So it's, especially in the stormwater world, it's even worse. But this will all be online, so we'll be able to do it from the comfort of our desks. And really, that's going to be a burden for the community development department more so, because they're the ones, you know, in primary charge of the administration. But again, it's going to be a collective thing, much like the MS4 permit with the stormwater. There's multiple departments that, you know, report things that have responsibilities with it. So there's just the annual reporting, hopefully it's not a big deal. I know it's not going to be as big of a deal as a stormwater reporting that we do now. Okay. So I don't know. I don't want to say I'm looking forward to it, but
right, yeah. There's an every 5-year requirement for you to provide some major report as to how
yeah,
it's gone.
So every 5 years we need to do, like, you know, report, okay, what's our analysis of how this is working? You know, do we have any changes? You know, just things like that. So it's just kind of a looking for trend lines in that data that you do in annual reporting.
Right. And I think if I, you know, understand this correctly, it's important for the public to understand why we're embarking on this, and that is if we don't adopt this, then basically any of our folks who want to build a septic system that doesn't meet the fairly simple Tier 1 requirements, they would have to apply and go through the Region Water Quality Control Board in a much more lengthy and time-consuming and expensive process.
Correct. That's correct. And, okay. You know, the thank goodness nobody SMEA has had to go through that process that's came and applied. But if they did, they would be having to get a basically a waste discharge permit from the water board, and that carries with it about an $1,100 annual permit fee. So, you know, they would have to be paying $1,100 right. every year to keep that permit open, to have the privilege of discharging you know, their wastewater on their own property.
That had answered my last question, which was how many people have embarked on that in between May when this, you know, became effective and when we get this adopted, and the answer is zero at this point.
That's correct, and so I think they're probably waiting until this gets approved.
Right.
So.
Right. So even though it's going to feel like we're requiring more, they're going to be really happy to have gone through the city.
Absolutely.
All right. Yep. Thank you very much.
No more last questions? Okay, we'll go on to Councilwoman Fonzie.
Sorry, but I do have a last question. The part of our affordable housing guidelines are that you could have a second unit, and I'm wondering, under Charles' scenario where you can't necessarily split your lot, will this affect that second unit the same way?
So second units will be treated very similar to how they are right now. So one option is you can, if you build a second unit, you can actually tie that into your existing septic system. You'll have to enlarge it or whatever and go through that process. Or you could do, it's more encouraged to have a separate system. So, you know, basically that's not a property split. That's not a subdivision of land. So it's still one parcel.
So they could go ahead and they find could. A way around it.
They could, as long as, you know, the evaluations and testing and everything else, percolation rates and all those things allow it in accordance with the LAMP, then they can do it.
And taking that one step further, it's my understanding that at least one mobile home park in our area has a communal septic tank. Will there be any effect on those? Because they're really in the lower end of the affordable market.
Right. I haven't thought about that too much. I think, I think that would be kind of one of those custom things where, and that's what really this LAMP does. It provides that flexibility that the state policy does not. So, you know, if you had a communal, OWTS, they would just have to, you know, have the qualified professionals do the testing, come up with a design, prove to us that in accordance with this that they can meet the setbacks, you know, the distance to groundwater, they have the area to do it, they're keeping away from trees and all those things, and if they can show that it works on their site, you know, then we'll be able to approve it.
Very good. Thank you.
Now we have Councilwoman Moreno.
Sorry, Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie. I just want to make sure. So you said nothing would change for second units, and so that means the rainfall requirement would not be applied to the second unit scenario?
No, because you're not splitting a lot.
Okay.
So as long as that parcel can accommodate that with the testing and percolation rates and all these other things that we require, setbacks and all those things, if the qualified professional that is hired by the homeowner can you know, provide us that data and it meets all the requirements, then it should be able to be approved.
And our current ordinance, is it a minimum of an acre for that second unit? Is that what that is?
Yes, I believe so. Phil's shaking his head yes. So,
if you need me to actually describe a few more of those things, I actually had several questions for me, Director DeBar. And now that I have the microphone, maybe I can chime in just a little bit so that the zoning can prevail. I want to emphasize, zoning will prevail. And the secondary dwelling units will prevail. The whole intent of secondary dwelling units is to have them not count as density on a property. That's what the state wants us to do. They look at the water source for that property and the wastewater outlet from that property as being one residential property, essentially an expansion of that particular residence. So as long as that system can handle it, that's the way we'll be continuing to review those.
And still within that 1 acre minimum.
Correct, 1 acre minimum. And that reminds me, the other thing I wanted to chime in on was that chart that Councilman Bourbeau was talking about in terms of rainfall. Our zoning right now, 95% of the area that's not served by sewer has a much larger minimum lot size than what this chart establishes here on rainfall. Our rainfall in our city, is most of it's over the 15-inch throughout the entire city. So therefore, there's really little to no, as Director DeBar mentioned, implications with zoning in terms of lot size minimums, in terms of affecting our future general plan, because our zoning is going to actually be a larger lot size requirement than that particular chart.
Well, but if our current zoning is a 1 acre minimum for, let's say, a second unit, and with the septic, that, I mean, that's a 25 to 35 inch rainfall, but they don't have to meet that.
That's correct, and I was referring to subdivisions.
Got it.
The prior topic.
All right, thank you.
Okay, is that Councilmember Bourbeau again?
Yes, yeah, sorry, those questions prompted this question. Just to be clear, you're talking about second units on a single property. Sometimes when a second unit is built, it can hook into the existing septic system. Sometimes, which in the case where I built a second unit on our property a couple hundred feet away, separate septic system. So if you have to have a separate septic system because of the layout of the property, you're saying you could still have the second septic system because it's all on the same lot?
Yes.
Even though it might not otherwise meet... you know, it might not meet the criteria if there were two separate lots.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any other council member questions? And a comment or two I have, but a question. The other issue with the state of California, I often say the answer to most of the questions I receive is, sorry, you live in California. And I think this could be one of those. There's also, we'll be talking about when we get to the slow cog agenda item, when we take a look at the RENA numbers and how that's changing and state requirements on housing. There's also the potential at stake, you come in and overrule zoning to, for example, on commercial, to have density bonuses for apartments, and it could well be that there could be a situation where we tend to think of second units, but the state could easily decide to think in terms of third or fourth units, and it sounds like that would not, they could overrule our zoning, and it also would not conflict with our LAMP because the way the wording is you wouldn't be required to have a separate system if you can handle it on the size of the property, because you're not creating a subdivision, you're just adding more units to an existing lot. So conceivably that could happen if the state just simply said, no, you can build more homes on an existing lot if you can deal with everything else. Is that a possibility?
It's a possibility, but we haven't considered a third or a fourth unit. Really, what we're talking about here is truly the accessory dwelling unit that is something that's mandated by state law right now for all residential properties. If you're talking about additional units, that might be a whole different discussion. And when it comes down to citing, if we do have to have a second system for a second unit, which is not that common, you still have a lot of other layers there to get through. Can you get the right setbacks? Do you have the right soil type? Do you have the right percolation? Do you have room for that leach field? Do you have room for that tank? Are you within a waterway? Are you near, you know, groundwater? All those same things are going to apply. So we're going to have to meet all these standards in our LAMP in any case. But talking about additional units above and beyond that accessory, that's going to be a whole different discussion. But it is possible the state could get there at some point because of the things that are coming to fruition now with housing.
I think you answered my question, is that basically the state is who said, yes, you can have a second unit. So the state could say, yes, you can have a third unit.
Possibly.
And the state could also say, by the way, cut your water usage in half, and now we know that you will be able to meet the criteria with an additional unit because we managed that for you.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting future discussions with our current Senate and Assembly anyway. So anyway, I think that exhausts all of our council questions. I did want to just touch on, we have a lot of discussion about the water board, and I think sometimes forget where that came from. And again, for the regional water boards, it all comes from the Clean Water Act federal level years ago when they had giant pipes of raw sewage and chemicals going into drinking water lakes, and people said, we can't do that. Very tough, very powerful laws were passed by Congress that allow really a drastic reaction to water pollution and preserving water quality. That got delegated to the states. The states in California created a water board. All that federal level power is now delegated to a local regional water board. Our particular one is a 5-county region, and they've got a lot of responsibility looking at water resources, and that's where their power comes from. It's very powerful on what used to be considered point source pollution, and now they're dealing with things that are considerably less of an issue than they originally were created for at the federal level. But as I served on our water board for a year anyway, I always repeat the story of a strawberry farmer, a lady on 5 acres that went from a $600 fine to a $35,000 with all the fees associated within a very short period of time. And we were talking to her before the water board, and I won't repeat how that came about, but I think folks need to realize it's a very I'm speechless. That's how it is. The water board has a lot of power, and it's not unusual for water board staff and water board members to listen to tape recordings of council discussions, how we are approaching our support of their mandates. And so I think that's something we've learned, that this is a very challenging and very important thing to do right. And I come back to, I think our staff have just done an outstanding job. It's very complex science, and it tends to be the state looks at a one size fits all. The fact that we are able to have a lot of flexibility given our really a good job of environmental stewardship in our level. We can go back to E.G. Lewis days for some of that with the separate water company and our wastewater treatment system that is very effective. Again, I can't emphasize how much I appreciate what staff has done, but I think it's important to realize this is really a different entity because of the nature of how it was created. Similar, maybe even more powerful than the Coastal Commission, and have a lot of power to, if they don't think we're doing it right, they could say, nope, we don't like your plan. You're going to do it our way. And there wouldn't be a lot of recourse. So I'm amazed you pulled it off. Good job. And with that, I'll open it up to the public. And again, if you have any questions, we will take the time to hear them and ask our staff to address. I know we have one gentleman came out this. Did you drive one of those antique vehicles here tonight? No. I open up to the public. Anyone wishing to comment on this item? Welcome.
Good evening. I'm Dwayne Powell.
Might have to pull that mic down a little
closer. Okay.
Perfect.
I don't usually use a mic for anything. Okay. I'm a property owner here in Tascadero, have been for quite a few years. I thought I heard you say that you've amended some programs, and the State Water Board is going to accept or reject on December 6th. Is that correct?
You go ahead and ask all of your questions, and then we'll have him respond to all of them if you can.
Okay. And is there any flexibility in your program you're presenting to the Water Board?
We try to avoid having a dialogue. Do you have a lot of one-answer questions like that, or is there kind of a... That's it. Okay. Well, then let's go ahead and have our city engineer address that. And if you want to wait there, that's fine. But run your questions through me, and we'll ask which staff to address. Okay.
So the first question I heard is you were just wanting clarification that before we can implement this program, that the Regional Water Quality Control Board does need to approve it before that happens. And that right now we're tentatively scheduled for December 6th to have them approve that. And then the second question I heard was, is there flexibility in modifying this program prior to that happening? And I guess I would say there is, but we probably wouldn't make that December 6th meeting if we wanted any significant changes.
And let me inject in there, because I think where you're going is, of course, we all have some ideas of, well, this might be nice or better. Staff has had the direction from council to allow as much flexibility as we possibly can, and for a lot of the reasons we've discussed. And our staff has worked with their staff considerably about every option. So I would have to say that I don't think there's a lot of options left. If there was something possible we could get in to approve to give us more flexibility or keep costs down, our staff have asked for that. And what you see is probably about as good as we could get. And I say that knowing that some of the folks in the community that have worked on this, like Eric Gobler, who's probably the best water engineer in our county and used to be on staff with the Water Board. Folks like that have been working on this too, looking for every alternative we could consider. And so if there's something specific, even I have to keep within the time limit. Now, we're going to ignore that, you and I. But I think if you have any specific things that you'd say, well, why couldn't we have this, or what about this particular thing, this is a good time to throw it out there. My guess is it's probably been tried. But if you may have something that we need to consider, so this would be the time to give it if there's something you see that we could maybe try to do better.
I mentioned earlier the costs involved of redoing a leach field particularly.
Yes.
It's extraordinarily high now because of labor costs and materials.
Yes.
That's why I was asking if there was flexibility. Is there flexibility there that where we can modify slightly, still obtain what's required of the regional board? And I guess I received, maybe.
Well, I think it would. I am certain that any. Let's say you have a failure of some sort, you're going to have an engineer review it and design and tell the city this would work and meet the criteria, and that in itself will be expensive, and then the city could approve it, and they have some flexibility. And I don't know if that helps you or not, but
okay.
It's.
It opens up more flexible to me.
Yeah.
And of course, the costs, like I said, have got extraordinarily high. I don't know if you've had a system put in recently, but labor and material has gone high. And that's what runs up the costs of homes. And believe me. Thank you very much.
Yes. I know I had my dad hand dug a septic system, which worked fine for probably as long as you've had yours.
When I had to put in a more complicated system, probably $35,000, if this had not passed and I had to do some changes, the water engineer estimated probably an additional $50,000 cost. So, yeah, it's getting tougher. Sorry, you live in California, as I often say. But I think we're doing pretty good. I think part of our issue is, you know, we have a lot more people living closer together. And the closer you have people together, you know, that it's a responsibility. We want to be environmental stewards as well as provide housing. And, boy, you add up all of the things we're trying to do. It's why most of us have gray hair. Look at Heather already. I don't see anyone else approach if you'd like to talk on this item. Again, I thank staff for the effort they've put in on this. I thank you, Heather Moreno. You've acknowledged that as well. We all appreciate what you've done for our community on this. I'll close public comment, bring it back to council. Further questions or motion? Councilmember Bobo.
Well, I just want to make comment that after this scintillating discussion of septic tanks, if our two council members elect have regretted their decision to, because this is going to be all you up here. Mr. Mayor, if no one else wishes to, then I would make a motion that we adopt staff's recommendation, all three items. Do I need to read them out or? Or as, you know, as what? As a,
the answer is no. You don't need to read them all.
All right. I would move that we adopt all three of staff's recommendations to the council regarding this item.
I will second that as amended, just so Laura knows for sure, as amended.
All right. We have a motion by Councilmember Bourbeau, seconded by Councilwoman Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Well, that takes us on to a council announcements and reports. And then we have committee reports. And I often try to make a differentiation. I've never been successful of that in 8 years as mayor, so good luck on that. I say we just go to council member. Anything you have to say, well, just go from my right to my left.
I have no report.
This is my week for meetings, so I have LAFCO and air pollution this week, so no report on those. But I did want to let you know that the DRC is meeting tomorrow, and there are several rather interesting projects coming forward. One, a gas station with a deli. I wish you would take a look at the architectural design. It's called Googie. And Googie is an updated car-related architectural style that looks like something from the movie Cars, if you've seen that movie, with sweeping designs and interesting things. So if you're interested, take a look.
Thank you. Councilwoman Moreno?
At EVC, we had our meeting last time. Mike Manchek was going through the priorities of the EVC, and what the board really decided is that there are far too many things on that list, as can sometimes happen with boards that want to accomplish a lot. And so we're normally dark in November, but we will be meeting in November specifically to narrow that down, because we want to make sure that the EVC is successful in whatever it decides to be moving forward with. And so we want to get really clear on what those priorities are. So I will update you when I know.
Thank you.
Yes, as our rep to the Homeless Services Oversight Council, I would feel I need to bring up that there's a deadline in terms of each individual city adopting a shelter crisis resolution, and that deadline would be the end of November, which for us would mean our next city council meeting. And I'm not, you know, predisposing how we should approach it, but I think it is appropriate for us to put that on our agenda for the next city council meeting. Several other cities in the county have already adopted a resolution, and I assume the remaining ones are at least looking at it on their agendas within the month of November. And in particular, because you have to adopt one of those resolutions in order to be eligible to receive some of the Homeless Emergency Assistance Program or HEAP funds. And within our community, ECHO has expressed some desire to apply for some of those funds. And in order for them to receive those funds, there has to be a shelter crisis resolution on the part of our jurisdiction. And so I think that we need to at least consider that at our next meeting. And the city manager, you know, is aware of that process. And I think is looking for direction from us whether we should indeed have that on the agenda for the next meeting.
Thank you. That concludes your report. And I was going to suggest, well, I would be interested in what you have to say. I do think there's some complexities with that. I was interested to see what the discussion was with city manager's office. My recommendation is that by consensus we defer to the next incoming mayor and the city manager to confer, and if it's appropriate to get that on the agenda, that's the city manager can pretty much get it on the agenda if need be, if it's time. But I don't know if you want to have a date certain or if you just have a discussion next time, or what's the discussion been with the city managers?
We would have to have that to the county by December 1st for any Atascadero projects to be eligible. So more than likely the next council will be sworn in on December 11th. That doesn't mean that the council-elect and I can't confer ahead of time on whether or not to put it on the November 27th agenda.
And I suppose, well, do you concur that we should have it on the, so you could certainly, we could concur to put it on the agenda. You could then discuss the ins and outs and pluses and minuses.
That would be it, yes. Okay.
So I think Councilmember Barbeau is suggesting we do that. If there's any thought by consensus to just ask city manager to have that on the agenda for the November meeting, is that something you'd like to see?
If there's consensus, I'm fine with agendizing that. I want to be very clear on what the ramifications of that are, not just money going to ECHO. And so I don't know how much time that takes for us to determine what that might be. But I think that's really important, not just to think. My concern is going ahead with something that then we really don't know what the ramifications might be.
Well,
because
let me make
the state
a suggestion.
Can change things.
As a last action of an old mayor, I will appoint an ad hoc committee of Charles Barbeau and Heather Moreno to have that discussion with the city manager. And if you agree to agendize it, so be it. If you say, no, I don't think we need that, and we can hear from others. But I think since Charles has been on the Homeless Commission, and incoming mayor, and I know the city manager has a lot of information that's still being discussed with the county, that I think the three of you could make that decision, and before the city manager cuts us off and say we're talking about it too much, not agendized. So would there be any objection by other council members of such an action?
Well, I saw Mayor-elect Moreno nodding her head no on this. I think her plate is probably pretty full right now. I think it would be fine to have the city manager make that decision on this one. I think she kind of knows what we're looking for in terms of potential strings that may be attached to it, mm-hmm. especially when they say that it's an emergency one. It may have things that we haven't even thought about. So I'd like to leave it at her discretion and put it on the agenda if she feels it's needed.
That would be fine with me.
I agree with that as well. I'm concerned about the ramifications as well.
So we have consensus. Mr. Barbeau, does you understand?
I think that's what we would be discussing is, is staff would try to identify what are the ramifications to the best of their ability. It's important to have the discussion whether we ultimately decide to do it or not.
So I'm hearing by consensus, excellent suggestion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, is we leave it to the city manager, who will have the most current information right up to time of being able to set it on the agenda. I didn't see a strong desire to have an ad hoc committee. So I would support what seems to be consensus that we leave it to the discretion of the city manager. Any further discussion? And the city manager, let me, city attorney, we got through that all right, didn't we? Thank you. All right. Any, well, let me just report briefly. I'm very pleased. I've successfully handed off IWMA to Charles. There's a lot of financial complexities there, but he will be working with that. And Councilwoman Moreno has joined us on our SLOCOG and RTA boards. I've invited her to join in and actually sit in on some closed sessions, being the president. That was easier to do, and it's very helpful. There are some things coming up I think it'll be best if she reports on at the future meeting, things that are going to be on the December 5th agenda for SLOCOG. But one particular I want to emphasize, as I touched on a little bit when we talked about wastewater treatment issues, but the state looking at RENA numbers, which is the kind of the target we are held to, and our SLOCOG staff did a good job of whittling the number down. It's all, even when we whittle it down, it's always higher than we think is humanly possible. But there's a concern that there is a new rule at the state level that says if in a community such as our county, if housing is in the 30 to 40% range cost above the average in the state, then you can have additional housing requirements put on you. That's going to be something that's going to be really an impact on our community. And we are actually going to have folks from the state at our SLOCOG meeting this next time around. And I think it is clear that, you know, the state and the former governor and future governor really want to address housing as a top priority, and it's a super majority on Senate and Assembly. So I think we're going to see a lot of things. That's why I don't rule out the state saying, yeah, we're going to approve things that are going to be related to helping with homeless issues and housing are going to be top priorities. So I think you have to pay close attention what impact that'll be for our community. There's also discussion on kind of a regional approach, looking to the North County to accept more housing than maybe might be a disproportionate split. The North County supervisors and mayors have had concerns about that, saying, well, if the existing tax split, where we're actually losing money every time you accept additional housing, especially in housing that's at a lower cost. So there's actually been some willingness to look at the tax split difference. There's going to be some really challenging discussions in the next couple of years. And so I just bring that to your attention. And fortunately, Mayor-elect Moreno is already on top of it. So I think she'll represent you well. I suppose I did want to mention last a little compliment to Roberta Fonzie, who's kind of had to pick up the ball a little bit at the Veterans Memorial. We did have our 100th anniversary of Armistice Day, and we did have a representative from the governor's office present a proclamation, and I got to receive that along with our other council members. I don't know who should be the official keeper of this. It seems like somebody maybe over with Veterans Memorial. I'd like to hand it back to Roberta Fonzie for safekeeping and put it with the archives related to the Veterans Memorial.
Very good.
So thank you. And I have no other comment. Any staff have anything else to say? Then we are adjourned. Thank you.